attendance. Chair is here. Vice Chair is in excused absence. Commissioner Bose?
Here.
Commissioner Landon?
Here.
Commissioner Bergen?
Here.
Commissioner Gill?
Here.
And Commissioner McGinley?
Here.
Okay, we have two work items for tonight. The first is a Planning Commission training, which is on the Springfield context, our locally adopted plans and tools for implementation with Sandy Belson, Interim Community Development Manager, and Andy Lindberg, Senior Planner. Go ahead and take it away, Sandy.
Okay, good evening, Commissioners. So tonight I'm going to orient you to a few of these documents I have spread out, and of course there are many more I could have brought, but I only wanted to make one trip. This is the next in a series of various sessions that you've had providing some background on planning. And so today we're focusing on Springfield, but I might make reference to some of the sessions that you had previously. And I do encourage you to ask questions as we go, because I did not do a lot of preparation for this tonight. Unfortunately, I've been really swamped. But I am fairly familiar with at least the long-range plans. We also have some other planners here who can speak. And I'm going to, toward the end of the session, turn it over to Andy Lindberg, because he is going to orient you in the general sense of plans and implementation in preparation for your public hearing tonight. So we also have Mark Rust. So Andy Lindberg is there. Mark Rust is also senior planner you were introduced to before, who is working on our code update. And on video camera, we have Melissa Carino, who is fairly new, but quickly learning the ropes of current planning as a senior planner. As we've been doing for each of these presentations, and I'll ask you to do this as well, Andy, even though I didn't warn you ahead of time, is to give a little bit of background about yourself, and so that they know like kind of what our background is and where we're coming from and what our experiences have been. So for me, my undergraduate degree was in architecture from the University of Virginia, and I worked in architecture for a few years and realized that I was really more interested in the site plan scale rather than construction details. And so I had had a bit of experience or exposure to urban design by benefiting from a Rotary Foundation scholarship to study in France. So that kind of directed me toward this idea of urban design and urban planning. And so I started looking for graduate schools, and I came to the University of Oregon as one of them. And it was a beautiful spring day, sunny like it always is here, and met some professors, and I was really impressed. And so I ended up coming here to find out that there really wasn't much design component in the program. But that ended up being fine. It's a good public policy orientation and community development, and so I ended up getting a master's degree from the University of Oregon, and started working for Lane Council of Governments. And this is back in the 90s, for those of you who are old enough to remember the 90s. And while I was at Lane Council of Governments, was able to work on a variety of long-range land use planning, and then I also did current planning as a dedicated planner for the City of Anita and City of Coburg. Then, after 6 years there, I went overseas, as I have a pattern in my life of doing, as a Peace Corps volunteer in Samoa, working on village-based development, and then extended for a third year to do planning and urban management, because they had created this new agency in Samoa to do the kind of things that I had been doing before on a more urban scale. So that was a lot of fun. Came back, became a planner for the city of, directly for the city of Anita and Junction City. Ended up in Florence as the Community Development Director, and then went overseas again, this time to Africa, and this time more in environmental governance, agroforestry, environmental education. Came back, wasn't sure what I wanted to do, decided I really did miss Oregon, so came back to Oregon and got this job here in Springfield. So I have really enjoyed working both current and long-range planning, and most of the time of my career I've been doing both at the same time. So seeing the vision, putting those into practice along with the actual on-the-ground development and seeing the results. So here in Springfield, it's a little bit hard when I don't know the code. I have to rely on these other people that use it every day. But it's an exciting time to be in Springfield as we're launching into the development code update. Yes?
What part of Africa?
I was in Guinea, West Africa. Mm. So that's me. Now on to Springfield context. So Patrick Wingard touched on some of this, as did Molly Markarian in their presentation, so I'm going to kind of fold them into the beginning introduction here. But as with many cities across the United States, back in the early 30s and 40s, cities started adopting zoning. And that was based on the Euclid case of Euclid, Ohio, that allowed separation of uses for the protection of property values. And so Springfield joined in that. And so we had some initial codification of rules or regulations, allowances, prohibitions of land use within the city of Springfield. And keep in mind, back then, Springfield was much smaller. We didn't have all of Thurston yet, and that was still the outlying areas. So Springfield was very small at the time. And then there are a number of revisions to those codes over the years. Then there was a joint effort on the part of Eugene and Springfield to adopt a long-range plan, and that was called the 1990 plan. It was adopted in 1972. So that's before statewide land use planning was in place, but there was already a movement around planning that really was coming out of the coast with the Coastal Commission that was formed and a lot of the need for some planning at that area that kind of set the stage for statewide land use planning that came in the early 70s. So we had a Eugene Springfield plan, the 1990 plan, that then became the basis of the Metro Plan. So the Metro Plan, the Eugene Springfield Metropolitan Area General Plan, was our region's attempt to comply with these new statewide planning goals that Mark had presented to you in his presentation. And it took a few times for DLCD to actually acknowledge all the work that Eugene Springfield and Lane County had done. And so this time Lane County is part of the mix because it's the three major jurisdictions. And I'm gonna switch over here if I can, because I couldn't get these maps into the PowerPoint. So, but I wanna show you a metro plan diagram here. So this diagram is the most current that we have published on our website, but it's not the most current in that it doesn't reflect all of the amendments. But it's the most current one that we will put out there. And it dates from 2004. But what I want to show you here is that there's an urban growth boundary, but then there's also a metro plan boundary, which is outside of the urban growth boundary. So the idea here is that we have three layers. We have the city limits as the incorporated Eugene and Springfield. Then we have the urban growth boundary into which the cities would grow over 20 years. And then there's the planning boundary, which is a larger area. So the metro plan covered all the way out to that metro plan boundary. And the idea here is that these land uses that are adjacent have influences on each other. And so there's a higher level of detail of planning done on the part of Lane County for that metro plan boundary, as opposed to further out. So this diagram we'll come back to, but this is a general sense of what the planned land uses are into the future for our metropolitan area. And then that diagram is used in conjunction with this document, which is actually, you know, given its importance, fairly small in this version. But the thing is, it relies a lot on a lot of other work that went into this. So to create this metro plan, there was the basis of the 1990 plan, but there was also a lot of inventory work that was required to conform with the statewide planning goals. So I brought a couple of documents to show you kind of what that might look like. So Goal 5 is a series of different resources, and this document is the wetland inventory. So one of the requirements is to, under statewide planning Goal 5, is to inventory all of your wetlands and then to determine which ones are significant and then to have local protections of those wetlands that are significant. So there's a lot of inventory work. Each of these wetlands has a summary sheet of data collection, and then that all feeds into policies and then implementation later. This is natural resources. So in addition to wetlands, there's other types of natural resources inventories that were done. On the buildable land side, for instance, this is a Springfield commercial land study. So you look at your lands that are zoned or planned for employment. You do an inventory of those, you project out your growth needs, and that all then feeds into policy. So the more recent version we have was our economic opportunities analysis that would usurp this one. And then there was also an industrial lands inventory that had been done. So there's a lot of background studies and such that fed into this document. And so this document really consists of some fundamental principles, but then there are the goals that are a broad philosophy of what you want to achieve that may not actually be attainable. And I put in your summary sheet the definitions adapted from the metro plan of the goal and then a policy. And those, you're gonna, you know, pretty much all land use plans are going to have at least those goals and policies. But they're also often objectives. As in the metro plan, there are objectives. And these are more measurable ways that you can achieve your goal. But they don't have the force of law. Policy is what has that force of law. And that's what you're held to. But all those inventories that I was talking about, those are all your factual basis for the plans. And so those are distilled down into findings. And so you're familiar with findings and that you need findings for decisions, but you also need findings for your plans. So these are the factual basis for your plans, and that those are included here as well. And then there may be assumptions that are put in, like what are your assumed population projections? We don't know that. That's not a fact. It's an assumption. So we make sure and state those as well. And then, as I mentioned, there's the diagram and the policies in here. These, what's written will supersede the diagram in those cases. Okay? So then we also have these other plans that are related to this parent document, in a sense. And so we have, let's see, I should go back to my outline here. So going back to the timeline of adoption, so the first Metro Plan was adopted in 1980. The amendments that I had talked about to get it all into compliance with the statewide planning goals. We've talked about that already. I got ahead of myself. And then we have these functional plans. So you're probably familiar, or maybe not, with the Public Facilities and Services Plan. So this is required by Goal 11. And Goal 11 stipulates what needs to be in here. So this will cover sanitary sewer, stormwater, transportation, and drinking water. Our Public Facilities and Services Plan actually goes beyond the requirements of state law in that it includes electric service as well. But that's just because it's a local decision. So those utilities all generally are subject to master plans. So there we have stormwater master plan, we have a sanitary sewer master plan, Sub has a master plan. Feeding into that, Sub's master plan is the Springfield Drinking Water Protection Plan. So this is kind of a crossover between their facilities but land use, because we want to protect that water source, and so this ends up feeding into a land use document. So out of those master plans, at a certain level, the bigger facilities, like the pump stations or the larger lines, must be included in the public facilities plans. So it gets tricky because these are utility plans, but then there's these land use aspects, and if you're making some changes to the major ways that we're providing this infrastructure, it becomes a land use decision that goes through the land use adoption process. So that sometimes is making public works type engineers and operations people work with planners, and can be interesting. It also gets interesting because a lot of EWEB's facilities are in Springfield. So again, that calls for this need to do regional planning. And I don't think, I'm getting ahead of myself again, but I don't think we'll ever get away from having a Eugene-Springfield public facilities and services plan, because there's so much crossover in how the services are provided and where their facilities are. I can't see us ever really completely separating those out. But we'll see, I might be wrong. Then we have our transportation plan. So this is another part of the comprehensive plan, but it's a, we treat it as its own standalone document. We also have a number of neighborhood refinement plans. So these all are refinements to our comprehensive plan. So they take an area of the city and take a more detailed look at it. There will be policies for that specific area. There will be maps for that area that plan out the land use on a more detailed level than you saw in that plan diagram for the Metro Plan. A lot of these were done back in the 80s and have had many amendments, and the Kelly Butte still stands as it was originally adopted. You know, there have been no amendments to this one. Whereas if you look at the East Main Refinement Plan or the Mid-Springfield in particular, a lot of changes to that one over the years. So these are still above your zoning and your development code. They are refinements to the comprehensive plan. So Patrick had mentioned in his presentation how Eugene and Springfield had a divorce. It's the easiest way to talk about it. And so we are in the process of developing our own comprehensive plan. So we will, I think we will still always have a metro plan, but the content of it will become smaller and smaller as we develop our own comprehensive plan. So I think like the fundamental principles will still be there, we'll still have the public facilities and services plan. There might be some other policies that stay in place on a region-wide basis, but both Eugene and Springfield are on our way to create our own comprehensive plans. So first thing we did is we created our own urban growth boundary. And so within our own urban growth boundary, we have to meet our own land needs over the next 20 years of whenever we're doing that planning. And the other big thing is that when we did that, we did away with the metro plan boundary. So the planning area and our urban growth boundary is coterminous, which is different than Eugene. So Eugene still has a metro plan. It's not called metro plan boundary anymore, or maybe it is, but their urban growth boundary is not the same as that planning area for their comprehensive plan. And then the next thing we did was adopt our residential land use and housing element. Now, the way we adopted that, it was all of those policies are in addition to the policies that are in the metro plan. So we've retained all of the residential land use and housing policies in the metro plan, and then we added another layer for our own comprehensive plan. We didn't do it that way when we did the economic and urbanization elements. So that's the more recent one that we're still waiting acknowledgement on. Those amendments that were adopted 2 years ago. But when we adopted those, we said that those elements replaced those elements in the metro plan. So our thinking of how we're doing this, creating our comprehensive plan, is kind of changing over the years. And in fact, that residential land use was adopted as a refinement type to the metro plan.
Is this where you also keep these inventories that say, I have 216 acres of low density, I have 380, and you know, of medium and yada yada, you know, like for instance what we're dealing with today?
Right. So the basis goes back to that factual basis for the residential land use and housing element. What is that inventory? What do we have available? We make some projections about how much population we have to serve, and we actually are required to use the currently Portland State will make those projections and coordinate that. So they give us the projection that we actually have to use and plan for that population, and then we make some assumptions in terms of like how, what types of housing, how dense that housing will be. Some of that's based on past trends, but some of it could be a policy decision that we're going to make some policy choices to change past behavior, so we're going to get a different housing type or mix and density. And then how much land would that need, and do we have enough? So do we? And when we did that study, we found that yes, we did have enough land within the urban growth boundary to meet our population needs. In those three different categories that would accommodate different housing types and densities. And then we did the same thing for employment with our economic opportunities analysis. Did the same thing for the land need for industrial and commercial, and we looked at target industries, the types of sites that we would need for those. So, and that's where we had found that we needed some larger sites, that we had enough land in aggregate, but we didn't have some of the larger sites to meet the types of employment we thought that we should have or expect over the next 20 years. So we started those planning processes in 2008. So a lot of the inventory work is based on 2008, even though like in the case of these two elements, they were not adopted until 2016. And the planning horizon is 2030. So that's why it's called the 2030 comprehensive plan. So we're getting close to halfway through that planning horizon. And any other questions about that? So. So then moving on to implementation. So the main way that you know of, and the main way that we do implement all of these adopted land use plans at the comprehensive plan level and such, is through our development code. So any type of development that comes in to the city or is built must comply with that development code, and that development code is based on the policies that have been adopted in these various land use plans, mainly the metro plan or the residential urbanization and economic element of our comprehensive plan. But there are other ways that we can implement these policies as well, through education. Our capital improvement plan is a key one, especially for the public facilities and services plan. So every 2 years we will update that capital improvement plan and identify what projects we need to be built, what funding we have, and which ones we can start checking off the list. So like in the case of our wastewater plan, we've pretty much built all the projects in that plan, and we're going to be needing to update that plan very soon, so we're doing some efforts to prepare for updating that plan, which will then result in changes to our public facilities and services. Downtown, there's been a number of studies of downtown. We have the downtown parking plan as to where we have limited duration parking and such, and so that was one way that we're implementing some of the policies in our downtown plan, downtown refinement plan, that's outside of our development code process. Economic development, a lot of the economic policies are being carried out through the work that Courtney and her staff are doing. We offer some incentives or through our urban renewal district, so there's a variety of ways. You know, here we have our Eugene Springfield bicycle map. I mean, that's part of implementing our transportation system plan through this educational tool. And then I also wanted to show that, you know, we do have a lot of other plans that we've done or studies that aren't adopted and so don't have a legal basis but are still useful. This is an older capital improvement program. I guess it's a program rather than a plan. I say that wrong. This is a study that was done, I mean, I just grabbed some random ones. McKinsey River Oxbow Natural Area Master Plan. I don't know, maybe Andy knows if this was ever adopted as anything. I guess it is. It's adopted by resolution. So oftentimes, if these plans are adopted by resolution, they are approved in a sense by the city council, but they're not binding in that they don't have a legal status of having to be complied with.
Who oversaw that particular study?
This one?
Yes, the McKinsey River.
Satry Associates did it.
I mean, it's Erling County?
No, submitted to the city.
Oh, for the city?
Mm-hmm.
It's not proximity to the city of McKinsey River.
Pass that one over to you.
Well, no, I'm not questioning. I mean, I didn't know. That's why I asked.
I mean, here's a Mohawk Boulevard specific development plan. So this could have become a neighborhood refinement plan, but it was actually never adopted. So it's a good reference, but has no standing in terms of being legally in legal requirements. Ian Curry was here, so. We have Springfield Historic Context Statement. We have design guidelines, neither of which are binding, but provide some good background information that can help people understand how they could build within the historic district and meet some of the historic guidelines. We have a consolidated plan. So this relates to housing. Every 5 years, Eugene and Springfield together do a consolidated plan, and this relates to our federal funds, how we spend our community development block grant funds and our home funds, and this, a lot of this will tie in policy-wise to our land use plans for residential lands and housing. But this has no land use status, but it's a way that we implement some of the policies that we have in our housing element. Yes.
So incentive-wise, I'm thinking that the reduction in the SDCs for the ADUs would certainly assist in housing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. We've just adopted a property, or reinstated a low-income rental housing property tax exemption. I don't know if that would really be an incentive, but it's an aid for affordable low-income subsidized housing. So that covers what I really wanted to talk about. I also asked each of you if you could think about a policy from one of these plans and look at how it had been implemented through a provision in the development code. And so we can do that. And then Andy also is going to come up and speak to give you a little bit more background within this context to prepare for, you know, looking at zoning and zoning maps and plan designation maps and how those get changed and implemented. So, but before we get into that, I would like to give you all a chance to share what you've discovered or learned or observations about any of this that we've talked about.
Well, first of all, a question or two, or a comment as well. The metro plan you indicated will probably continue to survive. Now, I know there's been members of Springfield planning staff that have felt that that's not going to be the case. I know, Andy, you remember Mark Metzger? Mm-hmm. His feeling was that the metro plan would vanish over a short period of time simply because of being individualized between UD and Springfield. So there is, I guess, differences of opinion on the durability of the metro plan.
Yeah, I mean, I think it will evolve over time, and you may have a say in how it evolves.
And the other thing, too, is that speaking of the divorce